100% of the funds raised to the Texas Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association by having Fresh Flash designs available priced from $100 to $200. Again, that's Artwork Rebels Tattoos for Harvey Relief Event, Sunday, October 8th at 12 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Artwork Rebels, 528 Southwest 3rd Avenue, Portland, Oregon. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO, KBOO Portland. Next up, it's the bike show. 11 o'clock, almost 11 o'clock on KBOO. And time for the bike show. And we have a guest from Mexico City. That's exciting. And remember to support KBOO. Please, we need your funds continually. So just keep becoming members out there. Thank you very much. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Saturday Market, From Our Hands to Yours, celebrating 44 years of American arts and crafts, freshly prepared foods with an international flavor and local music every Saturday and Sunday from March through Christmas Eve in Waterfront Park. Local artisans, international food, live music, PortlandSaturdayMarket.com.
It takes two wheels and no gasoline to keep yourself healthy and to keep the air clean. You can ride in the sunshine, you can ride in the rain. It takes two pedals, two wheels, and a chain. Everybody, ride your bicycle. Let's get together and leave our cars home. Everybody, get on your bicycle. Let's get together.
Good morning and welcome to the KBOO Bike Show, coming to you from Portland, Oregon, the first Wednesday of each month and available on 90.7 FM. Live streaming on kbo.com, and it is also archived so you could listen to it anytime. Our engineer today is Tammy Dean. Good morning, Tammy. My name is Alon Robb, and I'm joined in the studio by Terry Campbell. Good morning, Terry. It has been quite an eventful month, to say the least. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Alon. I agree.
You haven't looked at the newspaper today, so well, everything's fine.
Yeah, I mean, Portland, we're experiencing a nice sunny fall day, but I know things aren't so well in other parts of the world. So,
well, in the past month, Mother Nature has been raging. Texas, Florida, the Caribbean islands, Puerto Rico have been impacted and in some cases devastated by hurricanes. In Nigeria, Bangladesh, and Nepal, millions have been affected by floods and mudslides. And areas of Mexico, including Mexico City, have suffered earthquakes. And this is just a partial list. While these natural phenomena are not new, their intensity and frequency are, with climate change playing a major role. To all the people affected, we send wishes for safety and well-being, for a complete rebuilding of their lives. And we also are expressing our desire that their governments provide the necessary assistance beyond mean-spirited narcissistic tweets. Today, we will focus on bicycles and their role during these events, as well as their potential for helping cities rebuild and move towards a more sustainable future. We will talk with longtime cyclists and activists from Mexico City, Houston, and Jacksonville, who have kindly taken time from the good work they are doing to share their experiences, knowledge, and stories of devastation and rebuilding. We tried also to contact activists in Puerto Rico, but had no success in reaching them. Hopefully, they could share their experiences in a future show. In the first half of the show, we will speak with Areli Carrion of Mexico City. In the second half, we will be joined by Carter Stern, head of the B-Cycle in Houston, Texas, and Sue Korlowski, president of the Everglades Bicycle Club in Jacksonville, Florida. Areli Carrion is an environmental activist, writer, and Mexico City's first bicycle mayor, an honor bestowed at the recent World Bike Forum, earned fair and square. The elections were fair. through her many years in the forefront of bicycle activism. Good morning, Areli, and thank you for being on the show.
Hello, everyone, and it's a pleasure for me to be here and having that chance to talk to you about what's going on in Mexico City.
Thank you, and you sound so clear, loud and clear. Before we talk about cycling in Mexico City, could you please tell us a little bit about yourself, your background?
Well, I'm a cyclist. I'm mother of two. I'm 47 years old, and I've been working on promoting bicycle as a means of transportation in Mexico City for the last 20 years. I'm a member, founder member of Bicitecas, which is the tribe that has moved bicycling in Mexico City very, very successfully, I would say. And I know I feel part of the world. I don't only feel Mexican, but part of the world, and I guess that's about it.
Okay, you missed your astrological sign, but that was a great introduction, so.
Hi, Areli, this is Terry. I was just curious to know, most of our listeners, I think, are in North America, predominantly Portland, the Pacific Northwest. How is cycling in Mexico City? Could you give us a little bit of an insight as to what the percentages are of people that commute or do, you know, active rides for exercise?
Well, just as almost every other North American city, Mexico City, it's a very car-oriented one. And when we began working 20 years ago, everyone said that this was madness, that bicycling was something that was only meant for sport or for leisure, and that it was unfeasible, and it was something that it was very good to ask, but it was something that will never happen. It took us 20 years of work, 10 years of, you know, go and talk to politicians and make rides and go and sign petitions and all this, to have a first mayor that would say, yes, this is something we might want to try, and began 10 years ago with the introduction of Ecobici, which is a public bicycle system in Mexico City, and also it began building bike paths and promoting officially the bike use in the city. From non-existent to today, we have 170 kilometers of bike paths in the city, of different ranges of service, I mean, of security and quality, and we came from around 100,000 trips in bicycle the last time it was measured in 2007 to our current approximation numbers of 140,000 trips made in bicycle every day.
Excellent.
So 20 years ago, when you were first cycling, what was it like? Because I've been to Mexico City a few times, and, you know, like most cities, it's gigantic, it's polluted, it's crowded. Every form of transportation known to humanity has been tried over there, it seems. So what was it like 20 years ago? Was it very dangerous, and is it a little safer today?
It is actually, well, you know, I guess like in everywhere, bicycling is safer than most people think.
Mm-hmm.
Bicycling has this bad name of being so mm-hmm. dangerous, but it's not. When you compare numbers and when you actually do it, you find out that it's safer than most people think. It actually, because of bike paths and because of public promotion and programs and all this, it has become safer every time. Even our numbers, the quantity, as long as we are many people out there cycling, this pacifies the street for everyone, and we are part of the solution. I would say we are part of the change that we want to see in the city. But it is basically in Mexico City has existed forever from the very invention of the bicycle, but it was all the time invisible. Like it was something that never caused any problem, didn't took much space, didn't cost any money to anybody. So it was something that was done by some people all the time during our history. So the thing is that it was not recognized as a mean of transportation until only 10 years ago.
Hmm. And do you find that motorists in Mexico City and surrounding communities have embraced a different style of driving that allows cyclists to share the road, so to speak?
We've been fighting for the recognition of a right to be in the road, just as in every other major city. There's a bunch of people that drives that thinks that we are not entitled to be in the road, that we don't pay for the roads, that we don't contribute to equally, at least, as motorists do. So they kind of think that we shouldn't be there, that if so dangerous, they would never do it. So they kind of think that why there would be other people like us that is wanting to do it. So there's a lot of, you know, with some people, there's a conversation that is very loud and fruitless. Because these people kind of think that we want to take away their space, what they consider to be their space. We want to get some rights out of, having a right to be on the road will somehow prevent them to exercise theirs or something like this, which is not truth. Roads and cities are for everyone, and if I don't want to pollute the environment, I must have the right to do so and not fear for my security on the road. And this is something that is discussed everywhere in every major city, and Mexico City has it too. Since we have a long history of cycling for not only for moving around or for leisure and sport, but also to many different people selling food, people taking tortillas from one place to another, or taking bread, or to many other purposes. Motorists are more used to having people walking and using the road differently, so it's not as aggressive as maybe somebody would think, seeing it from outside.
And it seems like changing attitudes, so we don't just talk to the converted and the choir. It seems like to develop when there are more cyclists, it's more people, more car drivers are sympathetic. They know more cyclists. And also educational programs, maybe in the schools, campaigns, fun rides. Is that something your organization is concerned about and doing?
We try to do this. Since we are a small, self-funded organization, we don't have the possibility to reach as longer numbers or schools as we might like to do. But what we do is that we try to use our resources and time and talent in the most strategic way to reach out and let public know that we don't want to, you know, take away nothing to anybody, that we are just citizens that are wanting to contribute to maintain the quality of air for everyone, and that we want just to move around in what we want to be our mode of transportation, and that we have the right to do it, just as everybody else has the right to choose the way they want to live or move around in the city. So we're trying to be assertive and positive, because this is not a fight. This is not a war between different ways of using the streets. We sometimes, as almost everyone, we find or think of ourselves as multimodal dwellers. We are being a city dweller. You need to move around sometimes on a car, sometimes on the public transport system, or sometimes you want to walk, sometimes you want to take a ride with a friend. I mean, you use whatever fits best your necessities. So it's not a war, it's not you against me, or it's not a fight for space. It's more a conversation on how do we share the city, because the city is for everyone and for different uses and different ways of living it.
How has the earthquake affected life in the city? It seems that due to the continuing stream of other disasters, it's week in and week out, certain certain disasters haven't hit the headlines again. So maybe could you give us a little update to our listeners about how daily life is since the earthquake struck Mexico City?
Daily life in Mexico City, moving around in Mexico City is very painful on a daily basis. Like you could use from 1 to 3 to 4 hours a day just to go to work and come back. The commutes are very, very painful because not only it takes a lot of time, but they are very slow because of congestion. So on a daily basis, moving around Mexico City can be very costly or very, very non-efficient, very slow and frustrating. So when the earthquake hit the city during, it was at 1 p.m., on a weekday, or last Tuesday, September 29, 2019, everyone was at school, the kids were at school, and people were at their jobs. So in the first minutes of the earthquake and the hours to come, like the city practically collapsed because not any system of transportation was moving around. The metro went down. It was so crowded that people could not actually go into the public transit system. There were cars in the middle of the road. There were 49 buildings that came down completely, blocking completely entire parts of the city. And the regular congestion became a nightmare. Like nobody could move to any place. So what happened in that situation, in that moment, that was very, very complex. It was like a heart attack for the city, is that the only mean of transportation that was really fast and efficient was bicycling. The people that were on bicycles could go everywhere, no matter where, no matter if there was a building in crumbles there, we could move around with any restriction, not only we weren't impacted by the congestion either. So people began to turn to bicycles to go and reach for their kids because everyone was so scared about their children. And everyone wanted to move as fast as possible to reach their children. So bicycles became like somehow the bypass, the saving only means of transportation that could take people in long distances in a very, very fast, efficient way. So this was the first moments of after the earthquake. And then we we invented some days ago in a first earthquake that hit not the city but the state of Oaxaca, we invented a system that was called Acopio en Bici to being able to take all kinds of food and medicines to the places where we're gathering to take to Oaxaca that was impacted by the first earthquake. So when this one hit the city, we use the same system, and this very small system of transportation of goods become really massive. And in the first days, the only way to have medicines and help and tools to get to the places where people needed it the most, because there was people buried alive, was by bicycle. So in just some hours, we went to being a plague, some sort of, you know, like they treat us just regularly, like bicyclists are a plague in the streets. We went from being a plague to being an angel. and it was very exciting, very moving, because people usually they just don't let you go through. They don't never allow you to pass, or they are very aggressive against bicyclists. And what happened in just some hours, it was that people were cheering us and giving us way, because that they could see that we were trying to help to put some medicines and food and water and tools to contribute to the rescue of the people that was buried. So it was very exciting. It was a massive thing that when we, a lot of people of regular citizens that go on bicycling or do it because of they move around on bicycles already, they began sharing and joining the effort just like that. So suddenly you would have hundreds of people in large caravans moving around between cars and between buildings that were down, trying to move all these goods and tools to rescue people. So it was really moving, really exciting, and I think and I want to believe that this will change the way people look at cyclists every day, not only during earthquakes and this sort of cataclysm, but every day. I hope this will allow us to reach a dialogue that let them know that we are not here stealing nothing from anybody. We are just here using the streets and being part of a community and helping just as anybody else.
You're listening to the KBO radio in Portland, Oregon, the Bike Show, and today's we're talking with activists in Mexico City, Houston, and Jacksonville about the recent earthquakes and hurricanes and how cyclists have played a role in the recovery. We're talking now with Arely Carrion, who's an environmental activist, writer, and Mexico City's first bicycle mayor. Speaking a little bit more about the earthquake, I was in San Francisco in 89 during the earthquake. I was with my daughter and my parents on a ferry to Sausalito, so I didn't feel the earthquake. But, you know, we live in Portland, Oregon, where the earthquake is, everyone's predicting an earthquake. No one knows when exactly. I'm wondering, were you in the earthquake, were you a child in the earthquake of 85, 86? How does a city recover from an earthquake?
Well, yes, I was 50 years old when the first earthquake, like 32 years ago, and that was really bad. It was much worse than this one, and the death toll was also awfully greater than it is today. We're talking about this 1995 earthquake cost around 3,000 victims.
Wow.
And today, the death toll, until today, just that precisely today, the rescue ended. They took away the last corpse from the last place where there was still assistance going on. And the death toll today is of 326 persons. So the difference is large, is humongous, because we learned from the first earthquake. We understood that we needed to plan for an earthquake and that we needed to change the rules to build buildings and houses. So, and people is ready too. Like at school every month they held a simulacro. They sound an alarm just as if an earthquake was coming. So children and everyone in every office in every part of the city joined this experiment to be ready to evacuate when an earthquake is coming. The city has invested in large emergency system, and we have learned to be ready for a disaster. And I would say that one of the reasons why this was not so deadly, it was first because it was not as bad as the 1985 earthquake. This is something that is, you know, numbers are there. The force of the earthquake was very different. But also the death toll is not so bad because we were ready. A city needs to be ready to cope with this situation. Just as you say, there's no way to prevent it or to being sure about when it's coming. So you need to be ready all the time. And I think one of the things that is the most valued and I think most important lesson from Mexico to the world is that the best way to prepare yourself to this sort of, as you say, Mother Nature anger, is to be together with a community.
Mm-hmm.
And now to be ready to collaborate and be part of the effort and be there ready to act, to react, and to be ready to respond. Because if you are just waiting for a government to solve, if you are just waiting for any company or enterprise to solve the system, and you don't put yourself in a situation of collaboration and participation, then you are somehow in a situation of vulnerability. So I would say to Portland and to every other major city out there that we need to be to recover our network of community, of a sense of belonging and a sense of that we need to be together and face this sort of big, massive problems in a collective way. If you try to solve your own problem, you will create a problem for others, and you might not end up surviving a situation of this kind. So you need to be ready to collaborate and to help, and to not let anybody alone. Don't let anybody left alone, and that's the way a community can stand something as awful as an earthquake or as other Mother Nature, a big disaster.
Amen and amen and amen. I love what you just said. I don't know where our time went by. I mean, I feel like we could talk for a few more hours, but we're almost at the end of our half an hour. So I want to ask you one last question here. And we missed, you know, questions about your organization, about the wonderful manual for writers that you wrote, and which is available on the web. But I'm wondering if you could share with our listeners maybe your vision for Mexico City as a cycling city in the future, or just a more humane, community-based city. How do you see Mexico City in 5 years, in 30 years? And we only have two or three minutes, unfortunately.
No, I know for a fact that we, the people, are ready for a better city. We might not have the government that we want, and mm-hmm. or not the government that we need, but this earthquake shows us very clearly that we, the people, are able to reach out to each other and work together and pull ourselves up and make our city stand up, despite this thing that hit us very hard. So I look into the future with hope, and I hope all major big cities like ours have this sense of security on themselves and reach out and go and join hands and be ready to participate and be part of a city. I would say that any city is a big city if their citizens are not up to that task. No, you need in order to have a great mm-hmm. city, you have to have great citizens. So it's on us that we can be part of the solution. We can be part of a big city, not only in terms of, you know, greatness and size, but in terms of being a better city to everyone.
And those are good words to end our conversation with you. I will think of you, Arely Caron, who's a bicycle activist in Mexico City, a writer, and Mexico City's first bicycle mayor. I think of you and your fellow activists as angels with wings or without wings. And we really salute.
With wheels.
With wheels, always. And we salute you and, you know, all others who are working hard to make the world, to make Mexico City and to make the world a better place. So thank you so much. It's been wonderful to talk to you. And if you ever make it to Portland, come and visit us. It'd be nice to see you.
Thank you so much. And thank you for being aware of us. We are a one family. We might have different nationalities, but we are a one family.
Arely, if our guests wanted to learn more about your activities in Mexico City and cycling in Mexico, are there some resources you could leave us with that they could follow up with?
Yeah, you can reach us and by the www.bicitecas.org or in Twitter as bicitecas with a K. and we are there. Anytime you come to visit Mexico City, please come and join our activities and fun rides and political activities, because the world won't change until we make it change.
Awesome. I look forward to doing that. I've heard about your rides, and they've got legs up here in Portland. People talk about them who've been on them. So I look forward to joining you someday on one of those.
Thank you so much, and take care.
Thank you, and have a nice day.
You too.
Bye.
You're listening to the KBO Radio Bike Show, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon on 90.7 FM and on the web at kbo.com. Today's show focuses on the important role that bicycles have played during several of the recent hurricanes and earthquakes, and how our favorite means of personal and societal transportation and transformation can make a difference during recovery and rebuilding. We have been speaking with Areli Carrion, Mexico City's bicycle mayor and a longtime environmental activist. We'll take a short break, and in the second half of the show, we will talk with two bicycle activists whose cities have recently experienced hurricanes and flooding. Carter Stern is executive director of Houston Bicycle, whose organization works closely with the city of Houston and is responsible for the successful launch of an innovative program called Keep Houston Rolling. Sue Korleski is president of the Everglades Bicycle Club in Florida. So we'll take a short break. And welcome back. You're listening to the KBO Radio Bike Show, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon on 90.7 FM and streaming live on the web at kbo.com and also archived. In the studio are Terry Campbell and Alon Robb, and today's show is about disasters, natural disasters, but also recovery. We're happy to have as our guests in the second half of the show two individuals who are making positive change a reality in their communities. Carter Stern is executive director of Houston Bicycle, that's capital B and then small letter cycle, and his organization is responsible for the innovative Keep Houston Rolling initiative. Sue Korleski, and I apologize if I mispronounce your name, is president of the Everglades Bicycle Club in Florida. Good day to both of you, and thank you for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having us.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
And thank you also for being flexible and being together on the show. Before we get to the hurricanes, could each one of you tell us a little bit about your own personal cycling history? Were you always cyclists?
Okay, I guess ladies first, maybe. I don't know. here we go. My name is Sue Kavalerski, and actually I'm the president of the Everglades Bicycle Club, and I also run Miami-Dade County's Bike 305 initiative for the past 5 years. But I've been cycling since I was a kid, really, and cycling long distance starting when I was about 18 years old. I'm not going to tell you my exact age. Let me put it this way. I've been cycling for decades. How's that?
In dog years or cat years, you've traveled a lot. So.
Yes.
And my name's Carter Stern. So I run Houston B-Cycle, which is the City of Houston bike share program. I have been a cyclist as long as I can remember. And but for a detour practicing law for about 6 years, I've been involved in cycling advocacy, bike sharing now for a couple of years, and all focused here in Houston.
We heard from Areli in Mexico City on the first half of the show, and she was telling us that post-earthquake there a couple weeks ago that the communities came together and the cyclists were really active in providing some basic first aid supplies and first responder needs. Post the hurricanes that you guys experienced, was there that sort of coming together, or how were bicycles used by the communities, or was there a role to play, I guess?
Yeah, well, here in Houston, I was monitoring our bike share system as the hurricane hit, and despite about half of our stations going down because they're solar powered, we still had over 1,000 checkouts during the storm. And I had a lot of friends sending me pictures from George R. Brown Convention Center, which is where they were sending a lot of the people that, whose homes were flooded out. And they were sending me pictures of people riding up on the bikes, and whether they were getting there to donate supplies or there to volunteer or just because they needed a way. The car was flooded, the streets were flooded, there's no other way to get to needed services. Bikes became a pretty powerful tool to get people the services and help that they needed. So it was incredible to watch, and it was not just the bike sharing community. I mean, it was cycling writ large, because as anybody in Houston knows, when the streets flood, you can still get around on a bike. And so that's what a lot of people reverted to.
And so,
here in Miami, well, first of all, it was pretty difficult getting around via bike because the streets were literally littered with trees down, literally popped out of the ground and blocking streets and landscape debris. But the Everglades Bicycle Club went into full volunteer mode and actually volunteered at Miami-Dade County parks to clear debris in the parks, which were massively affected by surge and of course wind damage. So even though we did not by bike help the community, we did by hands and all the rest of the power we could muster in our community to help really bring back the town, literally. With the Puerto Rico situation, we have a lot of Puerto Ricans who live in our community here, so we are mobilizing at this point to try to help out particularly the cycling community there. I know that's a secondary thing to think about when people are out of water, etc., but we're finding ways on helping the cycling community also get back in Puerto Rico by donating our used jerseys and various bicycle parts.
I'd like us to talk a little bit more about the hurricanes, but before that, what was bicycling like in your cities and areas before the hurricanes? My impression, my maybe a stereotype about Texas is everyone drives a car, big car. what is the reality? Is that a myth that we created in the Northwest, or is that how it is in Florida and Texas?
No, there's no myth to that. Houston's interesting because we really are a global cosmopolitan city. I mean, look, we're on track to be the third largest city in the country pretty soon, and so we have a lot of people living here who have lived elsewhere, who have been in these progressive cities where cycling and bike share and all these things are just part of what it means to live in a large city. So we're seeing more demand for that, and we're beginning to see that in the politics of Houston. But I would be lying if I said that we don't have a long, long way to go. I mean, we passed a bike plan this year, which was a huge milestone, but we still have an uphill battle when it comes to getting the funding that we need to build high-comfort bike infrastructure in the city of Houston. So while there are a lot of cyclists in Houston, there's definitely a lot of sports cyclists, people that are riding on the weekends, I think we have yet to see a huge mode shift where people are using cycling to get to work and where it's normal to not be dressed up in full spandex going for a weekend ride in a pack of 50 riders. And so, that change is coming, but I would have to say that, from my travels and what I've seen in other cities, we are behind. we're absolutely behind, and we're putting resources and good people on it, but we have a long way to go.
And the reason people aren't traveling to work on bikes is because there are no lanes, or the distances are so great, or
Maybe a combination of both. I think most of what I hear is that it just feels too dangerous. People that would love to ride a bike to work. I mean, I ride my bike to work 10 miles, and luckily I have a pretty good bike pass running along one of our bayous that gets me most of the way there. But before I live where I am right now, I mean, it felt dangerous. And I consider myself an experienced cyclist, and it felt kind of dangerous riding to work. And, you know, you're weaving in and out of traffic. There's very few bike lanes. And motorists in Houston are not very friendly writ large towards cyclists. So I got called a lot of bad names.
Luckily, you're a lawyer, so you could sue them if you wanted. Or
I've got thick skin. I've been called worse.
You've been called worse in court, I'm sure. So, Sue, what was cycling like for you in Miami and Jacksonville and areas of Florida before the hurricanes?
Well, I can tell you here in South Florida, you know, we are a car culture. By far, we are a car culture. It is actually very difficult to get municipalities and counties down here, and even the state, to come around to thinking about building a safe cycling structure. I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but South Florida, Miami-Dade County in particular, is listed as the most dangerous city to ride a bicycle in terms of bicycling fatalities and injuries.
No. Wow.
It's a reputation we do not like. It's a reputation that the Everglades Bicycle Club is trying to help resolve by dealing with all levels of government to try to make them understand that we have to turn this culture around. And we know it's going to be a long, slow process, but we're trying to turn the culture around to consider using some of the infrastructure money on safe cycling infrastructure. I can tell you a story related to Portland, Oregon, by the way. The Florida Department of Transportation just hired a brand-new bicycle pedestrian coordinator here who came directly from your DOT there in Portland, Oregon. Her name is Elizabeth Stacy. And when I first encountered her the first week she was here in Miami, we introduced each other, and she came off as a very confident cyclist, mm-hmm. almost a fearless cyclist. She said she rode to work in Portland and used that as her main form of transportation. So a month later, I encountered Elizabeth again, and I said, "How are you liking cycling in South Florida?" And with a deer in the headlights look, she said, "I am scared to death."
Oh, man.
here we have a cyclist that was confident in Portland mm-hmm. and is scared to death in Miami, and that says something, because this is a rather experienced cyclist. So pre-hurricane and post-hurricane, we are still facing a very tough situation trying to convince authorities to start spending money on safe cycling infrastructure. And I can tell you that no longer are we asking for bike lanes in South Florida. And I know that sounds counter to what we should be asking for, perhaps, but it's not, because what we are actually demanding are protected bike lanes. We find that bike lanes alone will no longer make people feel safe because of all the fatalities we had while people were actually riding in bike lanes. The amount of distracted driving here in South Florida is incredible. And that's in addition to the different cultures we have here who drive differently in different areas of the world. So we're facing both a outside USA culture driving situation plus distracted driving. You add those two together, and you have nightmarish scenarios that happen here in Miami-Dade County. So we are demanding, not asking, but we're demanding protected bike lanes. And we are actually meeting with the Florida Department of Transportation. Our District 6 secretary here, is empathetic to our situation. He also is a cyclist. I'm dealing with the governor's office, and the chief of staff to the governor is also a cyclist and understands exactly what I'm saying. But it's a matter of getting those dollars rerouted towards building a protected bike lane network here in order to ensure the safety of both beginners and experts, like this person from Portland, mm-hmm. to ensure them that they have a place safe to ride for commuting and recreational purposes. So we face a big challenge here.
So Sue, aside from lobbying and helping with disaster relief, what other activities has the Everglades Cycling Club been doing? It looks like you guys have been around since the mid-70s.
We've been around since the mid-70s. And, you know, the club started as a road cycling club. We currently have over 800 paid members. We are the largest and oldest cycling club in all of Florida. And for many years, we were just, you know, a large bunch of people that would get together and ride bikes. And then we started adding some charity bike rides, which we call our signature bike rides. And in fact, in 2 weeks, we're going to be participating in one of our largest bike rides called the Freedom Ride. And all the money is going to wounded military veterans, who, by the way, will be riding hand cycles alongside able-bodied cyclists all the way down to Key Largo and back. We're very much in the community as far as supporting local charities like this one and others, and encouraging people, even the beginners who might only be able to ride 1 mile, get involved in an organized cycling activity. So we do a lot of community outreach. You know, we're a big advocacy group today, in addition to a road cycling club, in addition to off-road cycling. And I have to say that because of the dangerous situation we encounter on our roads down here, we took it upon ourselves to give people another venue to cycle safely on, and those are our off-road trail systems and paths. So we've expanded quite a bit since the 70s.
And by off-road, you mean mountain biking or gravel bikes, or
basically gravel. We've got some awesome canals down here, and we're using the levees and the gravel trails down here. Gravel cycling, gravel and trail rides, I have to say, have just become extremely popular down here. So the people that have the high-end road bikes now are buying all kinds of trail bikes in order to participate in the off-road rides that we offer. And we actually have a pretty good off-road network down here. We also have a couple of mountain bike parks that people have been using for many years now. But the trail rides specifically, the Grail rides, are what's really getting a lot of traction literally down here.
And your bicycle club's logo shows an alligator riding a bicycle wearing sunglasses, and I think it's a Panama hat. Have you encountered an alligator with or without hats?
We call them our pets because we encounter rather large alligators frequently on our trail rides because they are along the canal system down here. So it's, everybody, stops during the ride, takes pictures, and moves on quickly.
That's really funny. I had a friend who, outside of Portland this summer, was chased for a little bit by a little black bear. And so I guess there's dangers in all sorts of cycling around the country. Carter, I had a question to you. Could you explain a little bit about the Keep Houston Rolling program?
Sure. So as I mentioned, we saw a lot of youth on our bike paths and our bike share system during the hurricane, and we're actually in the middle of a $4 million expansion of that because of the bike share program, but it's not moving fast enough to meet the needs of people who were affected by the storm. So the estimates were saying that between 500,000 and 1 million vehicles were destroyed in the flooding in the storm. And of those million folks, you have to figure at least half aren't going to be able to replace that vehicle because they can't get to work, or they're paying for repairs to their home. And biking can be a great tool to get back to work, to get back to school, to go to the pharmacy to pick up medicine for an aging parent. I mean, just to get back on your feet. And so right as the storm ended, I got on the phone and I called Giant, I called Trek, I called Bike Houston, our local advocacy organization, as well as a handful of others, and just said, hey, let's get as many bikes as we possibly can and let's get them in the hands of people that need them. And so within 48 hours, I had about 250 bikes each from Trek and Giant on their way down to my warehouse in Houston. And we also had a lot of bikes donated, and we're using an application process. So we've advertised pretty heavily and just said, hey, anybody that needs a bike who's affected by the storm, go to our webpage, fill out a one-page application. I mean, it's pretty quick. We're not requiring a proof of an insurance claim or anything like that. We wanted to make sure everyone was eligible, that potentially was affected. And we're processing those applications on a first-come, first-served basis. So far, we've been doing about 500 bikes. We have a couple hundred more coming, but it's been you know, there have been a lot of incredible stories coming out of Houston and Florida and Puerto Rico, and you know, it really makes you proud to be Houstonian to see the way how people have rallied around people affected by Harvey. But every single day for the last 3 weeks, we've had folks coming in to pick up a bike who have, you know, lost their homes, lost their vehicles. Luckily, we're along a light rail line, so they're able to come in and, you know, with tears streaming down their faces, thank us for giving them a tool to get back on their feet. And so a bike isn't going to fix everything, you know. I mean, people that lost homes, people that lost family members, but it is helping give them a leg back up. So if you need to get back to your job, you work by the hour, it's hard to put your life back together when you're not earning any money because you can't get to your job. Or if you were relocated and you can no longer walk to work, or you're no longer close to your bus stop. And so we're hoping that giving folks bikes will be that first step back to normalcy. And we'll also solve what I think will be a pretty chronic transportation need long after we've quit talking about Houston and Tropical Storm Harvey. Because these, you know, things it takes a long time to put your life back together after a catastrophic storm like this. So that's been our small contribution to get Houston back on its feet. And in addition to doing good just for the, you know, folks that were affected by the storm, I'm also hopeful that people, we're getting a lot of people who say, you know, I haven't ridden a bike in forever. You know, I'm not a cyclist. I didn't commute to work. I didn't commute by bike. I rode my car. And so I think we're going to see a lot of folks who are riding right now because they have to. And even after they're able to purchase a new car, even after, you know, they've kind of gotten back up and running, they're going to realize that the bike is a great way to get around, and that will continue to be a tool in their quiver in terms of transportation options. So hopefully we'll see some mode shift over the long term as a result of the storm and of this program.
That's great. I heard last week that sadly after the festival Burning Man in California this year, there were about 5,000 bikes left there in the desert. But some very innovative and thoughtful community-based people collected those bikes and have been refurbishing them and fixing them and sending them to Puerto Rico was the story that I heard, but I'm not sure if those bikes have been showing up in South Florida or Houston at all as well.
Yeah, we were approached by somebody about some of those bikes. I had an email address, and then he went dark on me.
Fair enough.
I'm not sure what the story is. I've never been to Burning
Yeah.
Days, I don't know.
Shoot. Okay.
Well, yeah. Maybe he'll appear. Sue, you're the president of a business called TV People, and you have extensive experience as a consultant to TV news stations, including Fox. From your experience and vantage point, how are cyclists and cycling portrayed in mainstream media?
Well, unfortunately, it's not really portrayed in mainstream media, except when there is a fatality a series of fatalities like what happened up north with the car crashing into a group of cyclists. But, you know, I don't know about out west, but cycling doesn't get a lot of play on in the media, at least here in Florida. Should it get more play? Absolutely. You know, it should get more play, but it seems like there are so many much more important stories these days that are being covered that it's, I'm sure the news media has trouble keeping up with all of them these days. Hmm. So, you know, from my experience, and by the way, I'm kind of, I have to say, I'm retired from the television business. I actually used to work as a news director at a number of television stations and worked for all the networks, mm-hmm. Even cable networks, before I officially retired. And that's why I'm now in the bike business. Too much stress in the TV business. A lot more fun in the bike business.
Is it when you guys are putting on the Freedom Ride and other large charity rides, does that get some uptake in the local media as far as the, you know, contribution you're giving back?
We usually have county commissioners and municipal elected officials joining our bike ride. We have a couple of our Miami Dade commissioners who are veterans, so they come out and they are our guest speakers prior to the ride, and it does get publicity. Unfortunately, Governor Scott was slated to come down here along with his chief of staff for this ride, but you know they're still busy up in Tallahassee dealing with post Irma. Mm-hmm. So we're not expecting them this year, but we certainly are next year. But our kinds of events that happen twice a year usually get a fair amount of publicity.
Yeah, that's a good pull if you can get the governor. I can't imagine. I've been to a ride where the governor of Oregon has been at a ride before, so that's good legs.
And Carter, I'd like to ask you about another project of your organization called Free Wheels Houston. What is that about?
So Free Wheels Houston is an independent nonprofit run by a guy named Bill Mintz, who's a big cycling advocate here in Houston. And what they do is collect donated bikes, and they build them for recent refugees, so new immigrants who have come to Houston fleeing some sort of bad situation at home and face a lot of barriers to employment, to accessing social services. And so, again, folks who are probably economically disadvantaged because they're new, and strangers in strange land, they're new here. And Houston's a huge city, and it's tough to get around. And our transit service is fantastic in some areas, but being as large as it is, it's hard to cover everywhere well. And so what Bill's been doing for a while now is making sure those folks have bikes. He also employs some of the recent immigrants to fix the bikes. So it's, some work for some folks, transportation for others. It's a fantastic program.
And so we're sadly coming close to the end of our hour here, but I would like to sort of maybe close out on some, maybe just get an update for our listeners. I mean, we've talked a lot about cycling in your respective cities and the effects or the impacts that you were able to have prior to the hurricanes and after. Maybe just a more of a general update to from the ground of how your communities are getting back together in general would be a nice way to kind of wrap things up.
Okay, well, here in Miami, we're still experiencing large amounts of debris that's collected on the side of the roads. So actually, the bike club, the EBC, has actually done some surveys of all the navigable roads and have pushed that out to the community. And also the roads to avoid, because the tree debris is encroaching on the roadways. Our main problems at this point: flat tires because of cyclists on the road debris, some twigs getting in spokes, and drivetrains. So we are still encountering a narrowing of our roadway system because of all the debris still left to be picked up. But the way that we are best serving the community is by getting the word out about where to go and where not to go in order to stay safe on the roads at this point in time.
And Carter, we have about a minute, so give us the tweeter version of the situation.
Like Florida, we're used to having these big storms every number of years, and we've had, I think, 2 500-year floods in the last 2 years, and so it's becoming all too common. But, we are rebounding pretty quickly. City government has responded admirably to the need, and Houstonians are used to it. We're banding together. We're making sure that people that have needs, unmet needs, are being dealt with and helped out. And there's still some neighborhoods that were hit really, really hard, and there's still the big debris piles. Lights are out. No one's able to move back in yet. But it's a little surreal in that I'm actually on the phone from my house right now. My neighborhood was fine. And the day after the storm, it was as though nothing had ever happened. So it's a little strange, because in certain neighborhoods, it was like a bomb was going off. In other places, you would never would have known there was, one of the largest rain events in recorded history. So it's important. We're really trying to keep the need of the community front of mind, because it's easy to forget sometimes. But I think it's made all of us proud to be Houstonian over the last month, just because the community's been fantastic. So
great. And just as a quick way to wrap up, could you both provide some additional places for our listeners to find out more about your organizations or initiatives you're working on the internet?
Sure. Everglades Bicycle Club, you can go to evergladesbc.com. that gives you the full array of what we're all about. And also, bike305.com is the Miami-Dade County initiative that I spearhead. Either one of those places will give you a good idea of what we're up to.
So our website for the B-Cycle program is just houston.bcycle.com. And for anyone who's interested in learning more about transportation equity in Houston, I would check out BikeHouston.org. That's our local bike advocacy organization, as well as LinkHouston.org, which is a transportation equity group that was recently formed, is doing some big things to bring transportation options to more Houstonians.
Great.
And thank you so much. And please be careful when you encounter irate drivers or alligators on the road. And all the best to you, a speedy recovery.
Hey guys, thanks for the time.
Yeah, all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. You have been listening to the KBO Bike Show. Our guests have been Areli Carrion, Carter Stern, and Sue Kowalewski, who share their experience and knowledge of cycling in Mexico City, Houston, and Florida, and the role bicycles could play in recovery. Thank you and your fellow cyclists and activists for helping us move towards a more sustainable world. My name is Alon Robb, and I would like to thank our guests, my co-host Tara Kempel, our engineer Tammy Dean. We'd also like to send wishes for a complete and speedy recovery to Fred Nemo, a safe and enjoyable journey to all free of hurricanes and earthquakes. May your journeys be full of light.
It takes two pedals, two wheels, and a chain. Everybody, ride your bicycle. Let's get together and leave our cars home. Everybody, get on your bicycle. Let's get together to pedal and roam. You can take a ride up in Forest Park. You can ride with the light if you ride in the dark. You can ride from the mountain down to the beach. You can ride on a trail, you can ride in the street, you can ride through a...
Hey, it's 12 o'clock noon here at KBOO Portland. Marcia has arrived. She's here to bring you Jazz Lives in a moment. We are waiting for the news, the noon news, which isn't here yet. Maybe it's not happening today. In any case, Marcia's ready to go. Let me play one spot, and then she's off to the races. Okay. Thanks for tuning into KBOO today, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Pathway.